volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Okay, this is Craig Lubon. Thank you for joining us today on Radioactive Magazine. I have three guests today. First, I'll tell you a little bit about what the show's about. We've had, in the past, we've had stories and guests on talking about the problem with homelessness in Kansas City and hunger situation and all that. Well, that all was great as applied to humans, but our furry friends, our dogs and cats, have the same problems. We have a large homeless issue and sometimes food issues with malnourished pets that are loose, either ones that have maybe been born on the streets, feral dogs and cats, or a lot of times ones who have been lost and haven't found their way home, or abandoned ones. So my three guests today is Nate Metter from the Great Plains SPCA, which stands for Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. We have Alicia, and Lisa, if you'll say your last name. Okay, and you're with the Spay and Neutered Kansas City. And let me, what is your position with them?
I am the Community Engagement Manager with Spay and Neutered Kansas City.
Okay. And, Nate, you're the CEO?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And we have Lorna Helmed with the Humane Society of Greater Kansas City. You are, what position are you?
I currently hold the position of liaison with our local animal control, since we help them quite a bit with vetting and adoption of their animals.
All right. So one of the things that I want to ask you is, if all three of you can chime in, is what is the extent of homeless problem with pets in the Kansas City area?
You know, there's a pretty great extent, and we were talking earlier before the show, and it's hard to really predict how many homeless pets are roaming around Kansas City. So we're like, okay, so we have about four organizations that are bringing in homeless pets every single day. We have many more than that, but if you look at the four big organizations in the metro, they're bringing about 5,000 pets in annually. So we would estimate it to be about 20,000 homeless pets or pets that need homes on an annual basis for the Kansas City Metro.
All right. And tell me, I mean, I said some of the reasons why pets are homeless, but let me have you fill in that.
Well, I think it varies somewhat from neighborhood to neighborhood, quite frankly. I mean, there are certain areas of the city that have a higher population of animals in need. Many times the animals aren't really homeless, even the ones that end up in shelters. They have homes. It's just nobody comes forth to claim them, and some of them are not well taken care of, and others seem to be fairly well taken care of, but they're roaming loose. They get lost or they get picked up, and no one comes for them. So it's that problem is going to vary, I think, from neighborhood to neighborhood, and usually the lower socioeconomic neighborhoods have the biggest problem with homeless pets and with a problem of just adequately taking care of the pets they have.
And so part of that is because the families become homeless and then they're
right.
Not able to take the pets with them.
Exactly. And a lot of the issues we see, you know, when animal control picks up these pets and we call families and let them know, you know, well, this is the amount you're going to be paying. It turns out these families are unable to afford these fees and, you know, they're kind of stuck. They're losing their pet, not because they don't want to, but because they can't afford to keep get their pet out of the shelter or out of, you know, the pound.
And are there any organizations that can help these people financially to keep their pets?
Definitely. So I work for Spay and Neuter Kansas City. We are a low-cost vaccination and spay and neuter clinic. Not only do we do that, we do community outreach. I'm part of the outreach team known as Families Better Together. So we work with local animal controls in helping pets stay in their homes. So if we have a case where in Kansas City, you know, it is a law, if your pet is outside, you have to have shelter and water. So if an animal control officer has a situation where they've got a pet owner that doesn't have either of those things, you know, they'll call us and say, hey, instead of me having to impound this dog or write these people a ticket, do you guys have a dog house and, you know, some bowls so that we could provide to them so that this dog can stay with them? So we're able to go out and provide those resources, not only us, but, you know, Great Plains has the Hero Team. We all have a lot. There's other outreach teams out there that help provide these resources.
And our goal is to keep the pet at home, because that bonded part of the family member, we want to keep them at home. So each of our organizations do what's called a pet food pantry. So we are able to provide pet food to those community members in need. So wherever they're located, the closest shelter in your area, which could be one of us three, have the resources available to keep that pet bonded and keep that pet in the home for our community members. So all they've got to do is reach out to the closest animal welfare organization to them, and I promise that they'll have some resources, because our goal is that they get to keep their family member at home. Not to bring it inside the shelter, but as a community, providing the resources to keep that dog or that cat inside of their home.
Okay. If somebody is moving to a place where they just absolutely cannot keep their pet, what needs to be done to get these people to contact your organizations to make arrangements to surrender the pet safely instead of just abandoning it?
Well, most of the local animal control facilities will accept owned pets, not all of them, so they should call their local animal control and see if the city shelter would be able to take the pet. Also, before they actually get to that point, it'd be really good for them to contact one of our groups, because mm-hmm. there are apartment buildings and places that will accept pets. So mm-hmm. it would be, there's some help there too if they have enough planning. Now, sometimes they don't. Sometimes the move is very sudden, or they're moving in with relatives and they can't take the animal. So I would say, just if you can't rehome the animal yourself, like with a relative or a friend, reach out to the city shelter or one of our groups, and we can try to find placement for that animal. We, of course, would never recommend just leaving the animal abandoned in a house or on the street. That's kind of a cruel way for the animal to have to deal with a human's difficult situation. And there is help. It's just a matter of reaching out.
You think in some of those cases where they do that, it's a matter of maybe it was an outdoor pet and these people just are not bonded to the pets like you would hope they would be?
Yeah, unfortunately, we do see that a lot in outreach. You know, there's some cases where there's a neighbor that's still a caretaker to an abandoned pet in the backyard, and sometimes they're still tied up to a chain, still have a doghouse, you know, and they don't have anyone living in the house, you know. So thankfully, for caretakers like that neighbor, you know, they'll call us and say, hey, what do I do with this situation? How can I help this pet, you know? So even though it's unfortunate that it happens, it's great that there's still people out there willing to contact us to still be able to help out that pet.
I always like to tell the story. One of my favorite stories is Bosco. Bosco was a free roaming dog in Kansas City, Kansas, and our outreach team, and we all work together, so we all know Bosco, and our outreach team was able to go out into Kansas City, Kansas, rescue Bosco, put him into a foster program. So we all work with fosters that really, really help us in taking care of the animals in the metro. And we love our fosters. We need our fosters. Mm-hmm. They're a big part of our organization. So it went into a foster program and became socialized. So Bosco became a dog that could become a family member, you know, because he was loved and he felt the love and he became very social and was put onto the adoption floor. And an incredible group called Warrior's Best Friend came and adopted Bosco. And Bosco now, so from the streets to serving a veteran, is what he does today with PTSD. So that's just one story of how every animal, even if they're roaming out on the streets, deserve a chance and can really make a difference in our lives.
Well, and then, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize that when a pet is abandoned like that, it's just like when you abandon a child.
Definitely.
They have the same emotional trauma.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I don't know that a lot of people really understand the emotional level that dogs and cats have. Like, it's just like a child.
Yeah.
Oh, they do. It's really true. When they come into the shelter, sometimes they're so scared. They don't know where they are. They don't know why they're there. And even though the shelters do a fairly good job, you know, we try really hard to make them feel at home and to give them love. It's still a... I don't want to say a false environment, but it's not a home.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something that the animal is not really not used to, and it's very stressful. It's very stressful for pets to be in shelters, and our goal, of course, is to keep them out of shelters in the first place, but then also to get them placed as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jeff said, in foster homes, if anyone out there listening would like to become a foster parent. All these groups use foster homes to help animals make that transition from their former family to a new family. And those foster people are critical.
Very critical to our community.
And what do they need to do to become a foster parent to a dog? I've seen on SPCA website that apparently there's like a state certification in Kansas.
Yeah, so depending on what state you live in, Missouri or Kansas, and whomever you reach out to. So if you reach out to us or Humane Society of Greater Kansas City, on their website is how to become a foster, you know. And in Kansas, there is a license that is required just so they can track foster parents in the state. And it's like a minimal fee. I think it's $10.
Yeah,
it's not much. Affordable. And then it also helps set you up to what the expectations of foster care is as being a resident in Kansas. And we also help set you up. Each of our organizations will help set you up as it relates to home care and what types of animals you'll be taking in. And is food provided and medical care provided? So we set all of those expectations up. So your first step is to, the local shelter that is in your community, reach out to them and let them know that you're interested in becoming a foster. And they'll walk you through every step that it takes. And it's easy. It's very critical to our community that we have that in place.
Some people might be wondering if it's at least easier than becoming a foster parent to children, because I used to do a foster care, and there were enormous training requirements.
Yeah
definitely.
Actually, I know Jeff talked about the state. You do have to have a license, but the groups...
Yeah.
Get you licensed through the state. They don't come visit you. Kind of weird database and
wellness check kind of thing.
They're coming get you. So it's definitely easier. All this foster registration and stuff goes through each of the groups, and they take care of that for you in terms of the forms and things. But you will be on the state's list as a foster parent.
Yeah.
Okay. So that if animal control shows up at your house and
you have
a bunch of animals, you can say, well, I'm fostering for this group, and you can show that you have a certificate for that.
Now, everyone deserves to be a foster failure is what we call them. So I'm one. We had a cute little dog come into the shelter, and I'm like, okay, so I'm registered to be a foster. I'm going to foster this dog, and it never made it back to the shelter, and it's still at home 2 years later. So.
That does happen a lot. Yeah. However, don't be scared off. Nobody,
you don't have to keep.
There's no pressure.
You do not have no pressure.
No pressure. No pressure.
If somebody's thinking of being a foster parent to a dog, and this would be for a cat too. I'm a dog person, so I tend to keep saying dog. But if somebody wants to do that, do they need to be concerned, or are there special precautions if they already have a dog, a pet? In terms of making sure they're not bringing in something that in terms of medical issues that could be contagious to their pets?
Well, I feel like each shelter has their own protocol in place, you know,
right.
Make sure, you know, the behaviors will suit that other dog. Mm. I'm sure there's meet and greets for the dogs so that they know that they're getting along with each other.
Yeah, we try really hard to make a good match, and when we send an animal to foster care, we try to make sure it's in as good as health as possible. And occasionally, actually, we will have some animals that are sick and need a special kind of foster home, but we don't usually send anything that's real contagious or anything like that to other pets. But we would make a match. There would be a matching process. It wouldn't be just, okay, here, you're taking this guy.
Good luck.
And what's the capacity of each of your shelters?
The Humane Society, that varies too. But I would just say that last year we took in 1,000 animals at our shelter. Mm-hmm. And then we work with Kansas City, Kansas Animal Control. We work at their shelter to help them rehome their animals there and to do the vetting there. And they take in about 3,000 animals a year.
Okay. Yeah, so we have two locations. We have one in Merriam, Kansas, a shelter there that we work with about 10 cities with animal control. And we bring in about 4,000 animals to that shelter. We also have one in Independence, Missouri, that we work with the city of Independence on and work with their animal control directly. And we'll bring about 5,000 or 6,000 animals in our care in that shelter. So it varies on location and need. Okay. So.
And
we're not a shelter. We're we're an organization. We're a clinic, but we help. We do about 10,000 spay and neuters a year.
Mm-hmm.
We this past year helped over 2,000 pets in low income communities help get vaccinations and be in compliance with city regulations. So we do owner surrenders as well. Not as much, you know. We don't have shelters. We work with the other shelters, and they help us place these.
Do
pets
you have
there.
Foster parents that you can?
We
place
do.
Them
we
with?
Have a smaller base. Thankfully, we don't have as bigger of a need because we aren't a shelter, so we don't have them in our facility. But we do have a small foster base, and we do utilize them as we can.
And some people wonder, because back in the old days, there was always a high euthanasia rate, you know. And so a lot of shelters now, no-kill shelters. What does that mean, and what is the criteria when you have to euthanize a pet?
Well, at the Humane Society, our euthanasia rate, the euthanasia rate at animal control, actually, I can say for sure, went from about 70% to about 6% now since we've been involved working with them. And then at the Humane Society, the euthanasia rate is, 1, 2, 3, I don't know. It's something really low. We're a smaller shelter in that respect, and we don't euthanize very many animals. It's usually just animals that are extremely ill, suffering, not treatable.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are sometimes behavior cases, extreme behavior cases. Usually it's when an animal is a danger to people or an extreme danger to other animals. That we will consider euthanasia for those animals too, but it's pretty rare.
And ours is the same. We're in the high 90% live release rate, and we don't want any suffering. So if we know the animal is going to suffer, we have to make those hard decisions, and they're very hard, difficult decisions to make. Mm-hmm. And I think the high kill shelters back in the day, we might have called them pounds, and they euthanized based on the space that they have. Mm-hmm. And that's why, again, we've been talking a lot about foster parents tonight, but that's why it's very important, because foster parents allow us to have space for the adoptable animals and to bring those animals into care. So you know, we will never have to make that decision. You know, we've put in place those types of programs, fosters, volunteers, getting the community involved. So we now have the resources, so we do not have to kill for space. So that is where the high euthanasia rates came from. And I know a lot of cities and a lot of areas are adopting kind of that no-kill community, you know, and to be a no-kill community, you have a 90% or above live release rate. So,
now, in terms of services, if you have somebody that's low income or just can't afford some stuff, I know there's help with spaying them and neutering. What about dental care? Because that's one of the most expensive things at the vets these days. I mean, you can easily hit $300 to $350.
Definitely. Well, you know, Spay and Neuter Kansas City is not a full-service clinic, so we don't provide the normal services that other other veterinarians will do. We have plans in place to hopefully set up a medical fund so that we can make connections with other vets so that they can give us discounts to help these lower-income people. But, you know, still kind of in the beginning stages. But, I mean, dental can just be pretty expensive overall, I feel like. I mean, even at a shelter.
So we do dental in – we do shelter medicine and Independence, and we also do public pets in Merriam. So we offer affordable dental care. So we have a dentist on staff in our Merriam location, and we have a volunteer dentist in our Independence location. So every animal that comes into our care gets dental work. And then also, if you know, we also offer public dental that is affordable. So it's not going to be the high price tag.
Okay.
And dental is very, very important for your animal. I think my dogs go to the dentist more than I do.
The Humane Society also has dental care, provides dental cleanings and other types of dentistry and some other expensive things like x-rays. If your pet has an injury and it requires an x-ray, we do some emergency surgery on a case-by-case basis, and we try to make it very affordable. We get grants to help subsidize. You have to qualify. I mean, you can't just be anybody walking in. You have to have some hardship that you can prove if you're on public assistance or unemployed. Or I mean, there's a lot of different ways to verify that you need help. But we also provide services like spay-neuter, vaccinations, those types of things, and we try to keep it very affordable.
Okay. And between dogs and cats, is one easier to – do you adopt more of one faster than the other?
Well – that's a great question.
I
hate to say it's equal, but we have a lot of cats in Kansas City.
Yes, a lot. we definitely adopt out more cats than, but it's probably because we have more space for cats, and we have because they're smaller, and so you can put a lot more in a room than you can dogs, and that's probably the main reason is we just have more space to take in cats, because I think it doesn't matter how big you build your shelter, it will fill up with dogs and cats.
Yes.
So...
And we have a lot of a lot of feral cats in the community. So some of the things that we're doing as a community with all the animal welfare organizations is creating pet help programs. So you know, be looking more about that. We've started a lot of the coalition to do this to really help out the community in spaying and neutering and giving them the resources to spay and neuter not only feral cats or what some call barn cats, but also spay and neutering their household cats and dogs if they can't afford that. So there's tons of resources out there for our community members to take advantage of. So you can get affordable spay and neuters at each of our clinics, as well as, you know, if reaching out to our outreach teams, they have resources available too. If there's absolutely no way to afford a spay and neuter of your animal, there are resources out there. Mm-hmm. One of the resources is KCK Pet Help Program. So you can find information on Facebook on that, as well as each of our organizations know about that program. So there is help and there's hope out there. So.
And I know when I've been down SPCA, there's a lot of the larger dogs are pit bull mixes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a high success rate at adopting those too?
It depending on where you live. So some of the cities do not allow those pit bulls. What they consider pit bulls. Some cities do. The sad reality of it all is our pit bulls do stay in our shelters longer because there's not as many individuals available to adopt them because of different city laws and stuff. So that deals with breed-specific legislation, which is called BSL, right? Mm-hmm. So it just depends. But, that's the sad reality. When you walk into our shelter, you do see pit bulls, very nice pit bulls, very mm-hmm. Incredible
yeah,
animals that will stay in our length of care for over 100 days, and then that's very, very, very sad. But again, it all depends on can you have them based on where you live.
Well, if you're in a city, I know like Prairie Village does not allow them yet. But if you're in one of those cities, does it make a difference if they're only half pit bull or maybe one quarter pit bull? Do they allow those?
I can't speak for Prairie Village, but I know in Kansas City, Kansas, if it looks like a pit bull, it doesn't have to be 100% pit bull. If it looks like a pit bull, so it could be a mix, mm-hmm. they consider that a pit bull.
Yeah, I'd suggest mm-hmm. following up on your city's regulations of what kind of pet you can have. Like, they all have different standards of what a pit bull could look like. So.
Yeah, okay. And so if you've got pit bulls in the shelters, did they make an exception, or does, like, Miriam allow pit bulls?
Just again, if they already have the law in place in the city, there's no exception of having that animal in their city. So again, we have to find an adopter outside of those cities that allow those breeds that they have considered to be dangerous or whatever that is. So
even the Kansas City, Kansas shelter, Kansas City, Kansas is one of those municipalities that has. A breed ban for pit bulls, but they pick up pit bulls all the time.
But they allow you to keep them at the shelter, won't they?
They have their own shelter, and they have pit bulls there, and they also adopt those pit bulls out if they're nice, But they can't adopt them to their own citizens. They have to adopt them to people outside of their city. But even they adopt out pit bulls to people who live. In other cities. Mm-hmm. So
it is a challenge for us in our shelters, and we understand the behavior of the animal, right? We understand, we see many of them, so we understand how sweet they are. Mm-hmm. And, back in the day, they were called the nanny dog, so I'm like, what happened between the nanny dog and not allowing it into the city, So, again, but it's education. It's getting involved as a community citizen and educating the lawmakers in your city, and having an open conversation and having a good conversation, having a sit down and hey, what are your thoughts on this? Why do you believe this? And educating them on what it is, what breed specific laws are and how it affects not only our shelters, but it affects that bond that you would have with that animal that you can't have it in your home. You have this sweet dog that might be a mix and you cannot have it in your home. And it's at the end of the day, it's sad, but again, I think it's an educational journey that you need to go on with your decision makers in your cities. So
there was one interesting thing I saw not this past summer, but summer before. There's a neighbor across the street from me who has their front yard fenced in, and they had three dogs, and I'm pretty sure one of them was a pit bull.
Uh-huh.
Frequently would get out. It was very friendly, and you could pet it. And I think everybody assumed, including there was a police officer that lived down the street that wasn't concerned about it and would take the dog and put it back in the fence, and everybody assumed that it was jumping the fence.
Uh-huh.
Well, one day I saw it getting out, and it was not jumping the fence. It was climbing the fence with its paws, just like a child would climb the fence. It was the first time I had ever seen that.
Yeah, that's unfortunate when they learn how to do that.
And I think we all have a place in our heart for the breeds that are discriminated against in the cities, because, again, we get to see it on a day-to-day basis, and we get to see the love that they provide, and we know that the love that they could provide in a home, and it's just sad, you know. So I think we all have a big passion around that.
I don't know how much you keep track of the individual dogs.
Yeah.
But there was SPCA at Merriam had a purebred American Eskimo dog that had been surrendered about 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
You still have that one?
We do, actually, yes. and I have an American Eskimo home, so I'm like, oh, I could take this.
Well, I have one that
we do, and he's getting put up for adoption over the next couple of days.
Okay.
So he's went through our medical care program, and he'll be ready for adoption in a couple of days. But he is absolutely adorable.
Yeah.
And he is the sweetest American Eskimo I've ever met.
I love it. Well, he can't be the sweetest, because I had one, and mine is the sweetest.
And the sweetest? Okay, perfect.
She just died in August. She had 16, so... so I took that one to the lock at the shelter.
Yeah.
Now my brown gloves are all white.
Well, he will be up for adoption fairly soon, so...
All right, so we've got to end it now. I want to thank all three of you for being here. And for listeners who have just joined us, we were talking about homeless dogs and shelter pets and services provided. And I will include on the description of the podcast, as soon as we post that on the site, we'll have a list of the links to the three organizations.
Okay, great.
All right, awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Okay.